Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll free, 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It is our great big Friday show. And for this Friday, I get a real treat. Well, I get a treat every day. Working at Catholic Answers is a treat because
Amen.
There are these remarkable people here. And
it's a great staff.
It is a great staff. And look, a lot of them are here in the studio with us today. So many wonderful people.
I can't get enough
and
of this.
Erica. I was just kidding, Erica. Sorry. but, you know, I wanted to do a show like this because I think there's so many great conversations that happen. You hear them. You're walking down the hall and you hear people having these discussions and you're like, well, I want to get in on that. But I just thought, well, let's do them on the air. Let's do the discussions on the air. And I enjoy talking with both of you. And I'm very grateful that you came in to do this. And so this hour, I want to propose to you a somewhat serious topic to start with. Not somewhat serious, a grave topic, actually, a very, very serious topic to start with. And I guess I thought of it because, it looks like, are we making peace in North Korea or not? I don't know what's going to happen there. But I pray for it, even if, you know, I know that there's all this discord in our country, and I'm sure there are people who are like, they don't want the president as he is to get any credit or whatever. I don't know, whatever the fact is, peace in North Korea would be such a blessing, and it's worth praying for. I don't know how you achieve it. I don't know if this is going to work or not work, but we're now. You actually said this to me earlier today, but we're more than 15 years at war.
15 years as of March, right?
As of March, 15 years. But even earlier, if you consider the Afghanistan.
Well, sure.
Stuff.
And then all the embargoes that kind of never went away anyway, which are in fact acts of war.
Right. And so
formally, the United States has been at war for 15 years, and I wonder if how many Americans even, you know,
think about that. Yeah, like where I live, you have to think about it because. You know, we're right next to Camp Pendleton.
And you see the steady stream in and out of those young men now on their fifth, sixth, seventh tour.
It was like my town, I think, lifted by about 3 feet during the beginning of the Iraq War because so many Marines were gone.
Right.
All that weight came off the town.
There's a whole Marine division up there.
Yeah. And so I do think we have a serious obligation as Catholics every now and then to just stop and say, okay, what is my obligation in all this as a peacemaker, my personal obligation? We can talk about institutional obligations as well. I don't think there's much I can do to, you know, steer the Vatican or what. I don't have that kind of power.
No, you probably don't. The Vatican. The Vatican's position on these things is usually pretty sound.
Right.
It has been for the past three papacies.
One area.
Yeah.
I mean, I can remember very well when a Syrian rite Iraqi bishop spoke to the fellow on Catholic Raymond Arroyo.
Raymond Arroyo, yeah.
And he just simply expounded what John Paul II had said about the Iraq War very objectively.
Yeah.
And then concluded, and Raymond went nuts because it didn't correspond to American Republican ideas about the Iraq War. And you realize you can talk about dissent on contraception and abortion and all these other things, but let's just consider that at least a certain
enough.
Respectful consideration of the views of the Holy Father. This was John Paul II, by the way,
yeah.
Might be interesting to adopt. But this poor Iraqi bishop was just saying, you know, I don't know if this is really a good idea. And he was treated like he was some sort of spy.
Yeah.
For, you know, the Saudis.
It's also true that, like I said, living next to the biggest Marine base in the world, many of the noblest people you will ever meet are currently in the U.S. Armed Forces.
Absolutely. And they're the ones who understand best what's at stake.
Right.
And they have various opinions, which we'd be surprised to hear if they could speak them.
When I was at Thomas More last Saturday, after the graduation, there was a young man who was commissioned, second lieutenant, in the Marine Corps, brought me back 31 years ago, and your first salute, and then giving a silver dollar to all these traditions, giving the silver dollar to the man who gives you your first salute. But there was this young man in his blue dress alphas and with nothing but right the very best and purest of intentions to serve his country and to be part of this thing greater than he is. And yet these young men and women, of course, now, and that adds a dimension of moral complexity, young men and women now really coming back from Iraq, from Afghanistan, physically wounded, of course, but then, you know, the insane and the maimed and the post-traumatic stress disorder and the overwhelming burden on the Veterans Association to care for these young men, and the extremely high suicide rate. And for what? And has there been an examination, as there has been at the Holy See, by John Paul, by Benedict, by Pope Francis, right? Are these invasions, are these wars, do they comport with what the church has consistently taught about war and justice, or just war,
right?
For, you know, going back to the time of Augustine and before.
And it's important to point out that Chris speaks with an authority because he commanded men in Iraq. Right.
Well, in Desert Shield.
Right.
But so, I mean, I don't speak of this as a pacifist, and there is certainly a need for an armed forces. But going back to what Father Hugh was saying earlier, there is this kind of, I'm going to say blind spot right now, maybe willful blind spot on the part of some folks who would describe themselves as conservative Catholics. And I don't like that word conservative, and you and I have talked about that. But for shorthand now, we'll use it. And yet, they're very faithful on the real presence or on the question of contraception. But let the church speak on questions of just war that call into question American foreign policy and – yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that being the case, I do think it's very, very positive for us to step back and reflect on it. We have to allow our consciences to be formed in these things and not constantly – I suppose there's a certain way in which there's a kind of animal spirit that can keep being aroused that keeps us from calmer spirits and from conversation with Christ's spirit, to let his mind be in us, so to speak. But I wonder how much, even separate from the fact is, the war on terrorism, it poses moral problems that we have not seen before. This is a different kind of thing. It's very, very complicated. But even warfare in general, you talk about the centuries old, even now far more than a millennium old idea of the just war theory, which has permeated the entire world now, born out of the mind mostly of St. Augustine. But
off of Cicero.
If it had permeated it, we wouldn't have the situation we're in right now. Right.
But I wonder –
because we don't have just wars anymore.
Are the rules different now that the weapons are so different? Is that something we have to consider?
This actually is a question that both John Paul and Benedict ask. Is it possible to prosecute a just war in the world of modern weaponry?
Yeah. Right. And one of the things that you certainly see is with these very high precision weapons and things, this war didn't take a turn towards mass destruction of cities as it had. Like, there's a way in which the mass destruction of Dresden in World War II is certainly a more morally problematic thing than the precision munitions we have now. But still, the capacity of these weapons to be out of all proportion to what humans should be doing to one another.
And the word there is proportion, because the degree to which non-combatants are involved in a war is the degree to which it's unjust.
Yeah.
Simply. That's all there is to
okay,
it.
Okay, I need
and
you to say
war,
that.
The
use in bello forbids the direct targeting of non-combatants.
So I want to get that sentence from you again.
The degree to which non-combatants are involved in a war is the degree to which it's unjust. Because that's a very simple consideration. You can talk about collateral damage and so on, but when you have means of destruction, which depend upon the mass killing of
people
non-combatant
who are not,
populations,
weapons,
then we know right away it's just unjust.
Weapons designed to target the civilian population.
Right. But are you talking about nuclear weapons or conventional weapons?
Nagasaki, Hiroshima, and I know I'm going to light up the social media channels right now.
Either one. I mean, the Japanese had already basically offered to surrender before we dropped this bomb.
But you were an artillery officer in the Marine Corps.
And there are some really awful things that you can do with what they call improved conventional munitions, ICM or dual-purpose ICM.
Would you say that some of these munitions are, even in their design, immoral? That is, that there's not a moral way to use them.
Well, here's a difficulty. Say, you can lay a minefield now. Actually, you were able to do it 20 years ago when I was in the Marine Corps or more. You can lay a minefield using, shells from shot out of a howitzer. Now that minefield is there. It's there, until those mines are somehow disabled. And then now is your deliberate intention? Intention is all of this, right? Is your deliberate intention to, harm?
Like kill a goat herder that's coming across the field?
But,
no.
But in fact, that is what happened. So it's foreseen. Right, it's at least foreseen, and perhaps not intended, and maybe in some cases it is intended. Right?
Well, may I ask you, Father? Well, we have to take a break, but I want to ask you about the moral, the way to make that moral calculation, because if you do something that in the moment is just going to litter this area with mines, it may be in the moment no one dies. That's just going to be out there. But you know that there's no discretion in those weapons. So now you've lost control of it. Is that act in itself an immoral thing? I want to ask you about that when we come back, and more about our role. I really want to talk about our positive role, too, if we may move to that as peacemakers.
Sure.
We'll do that when we come back on Catholic Answers Live, Catholic Discussions Live, right after this.
Catholic Answers Live. We're here for you.
Tim Staples here. Since May is the month of Mary and Mother's Day, I'm offering a great opportunity for you to help yourself, your family, and your friends to get to know our Blessed Mother more deeply than ever before. And to help make that happen, we're offering my book, Behold Your Mother, a biblical and historical defense of the Marian doctrines, for only $9.95. Folks, that's over 45% off the regular price. From her Immaculate Conception to the Annunciation, from her title as Mother of God to her perpetual virginity, from her assumption into heaven to her role as co-redemptrix, I'll give you all the facts and back them up with solid biblical evidence in a way that's easy to read, remember, and understand. Make this May the month you, your friends, and your family grow closer to the Mother of the Church, our Mother Mary. To get your copies of Behold Your Mother, call 1-888-291-8000 or log on to the shop at Catholic.com.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Looking for an on-fire Catholic speaker for your event? Catholic Answers speakers will inform and inspire your audience to grow in their Catholic faith. For more information on booking a Catholic Answers speaker, visit catholicanswerspeakers.com today.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Cy Kellett, your host here with our president of Catholic Answers, Chris Check, and with our chaplain, Father Hugh Barber, Norbertine priest. And we're taking this time just for discussions for a Friday afternoon. Friday evening, but it'd be great to have these discussions. We're talking a little bit about war and peace, and I do think we can – I mean, it's a tough world out there. There's nasty things, and there's nasty weapons everywhere. I mean, the planet is bristling with weapons. I had a moral question for you, and then I do want to move into a kind of a positive, like how can, what is our role as Christians in a world bristling with these weapons, and see if we can get an get somewhere that way. But my question was, are there like a conventional weapon that will just indiscriminately kind of throw mines everywhere? What's the moral calculus there? Like how, what would have to be the case in order for that to be okay to use a weapon like that? Or is there no case in which it's acceptable? Or I'm not trying to get you to answer the question as much as tell me how do we make a moral calculation like that?
What principles can we apply?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the principle is the principle of proportionality. And then...
So unpack that, Father. So whatever is used has to be equal to the threat.
The threat, right. And then the problem is that you have enemies who have fewer or different moral principles from yours, and they are willing to use disproportionate means. And that's where the difficulty arises.
Yeah, I see.
You say, well, then we have to at least to be willing to be threaten them that we'll do the same thing.
Yeah.
If they do what they – and that's not necessarily immoral. That is just to lead – like what Reagan did with the Gorbachev. He did the Space Wars defense and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
The media hated him for that and said he was – you know, and he actually got him to – or our current president where he just spoke so shockingly about
– about the guy in North Korea.
North Korea.
Yeah.
That it actually forced them – so that kind of dialogue, that's a different question. That's rhetoric, right?
Yeah.
That's not killing people. That's frightening bad people,
right?
That they should not be doing the things that they plan to do,
but
if they can do them or not.
Prepared to do these bad things.
But Reagan himself admitted that he would never, ever would have pushed the button.
Yeah.
He could never have done it.
That's my feeling is that a rational person can't, and that's part of why you have to keep irrational people from getting these.
And
things.
I think it's also very important to add just parenthesis in the midst of all this discussion. The Church has never forbidden any citizen to serve in the armed forces.
No,
that
no,
person's
far from
country.
It.
Right.
And so consequently, what we're saying in criticism of the wars that we have in this country is not a criticism of joining the military or being in it at all.
No.
I mean, that's just a different question altogether.
No, this is a fulfillment of patriotism, which is an honorable virtue.
Right. And so – and there are always things that are worth defending in your country, but – soldiers have opinions about wars just like everybody else.
Right.
So we're not – if anyone's listening and getting upset because they have a son or a daughter or whatever in the armed forces,
that's
not what we're talking about. We're talking about the actual issues. So it's not an ignoble thing.
And also talking about choices we have to make on a societal level. It's not up to the soldier to make policy decisions.
Right.
But that doesn't exempt us from having to talk about those things, and they must be made in the light – of Christ's teaching.
And there were about 1 million people in the Soviet army who were Roman Catholics.
Were there really?
Yes, and maybe 3 in the German army. I mean, come on. And then in the American army
one of them
also. You know, there were lots of Catholics in America. So, I mean, the point is the Church never tells people you can't join the army of your own country. It just doesn't happen.
No, right.
Because it's too much of a moral burden to put on a person who is just simply trying to do what's right for his own nation.
The poet laureate of the Confederacy was a Catholic priest.
Well, that's a different question.
Right.
You're always trying to calm Chris down. Okay, Chris.
Furl the banner.
But I want to throw this out at you. I think I am still of the mind that here in the 21st century, we are still paying dearly for bad 19th century ideas. Paying dearly for the ideas
and
of
18th century ideas.
Yeah. 18th century especially.
Mostly.
Yes.
Well, okay. So, but I'm going to the 19th century because I have a bone to pick with Clausewitz. I don't on war and all that.
But he comes out of that revolutionary.
That's what they all read, you know, the Clausewitz.
Tradition.
Well, you can do that accent because you can speak German. I can't. But
The Germans read it and the Russians read it.
Okay, but Clausewitz, there's a direct line from Clausewitz to World War I. I know that the military professionals don't want to hear that. But the fact is there's a certain way in which if you study war as the only means to peace, and Clausewitz recommends to you mass and build up mass in your armed forces, eventually you get a continent like Europe that has so much mass that it tips over into the mass destruction of the society. Ooh, that's clever what I did there.
If you prepare for a war, you're going to have one.
That's the thing is I do believe the idea has taken root that if you want peace, prepare for war. And that is – I wouldn't say that's inimical to the gospel, but it's certainly dismissive of the gospel.
Yeah, well, St. John Paul II said in his discourse to the UN back in the late 80s that it used to be said, it was from Tacitus, the Roman historian, if you wish peace, prepare for war. Civis pacem, para bellum. He said that doesn't apply anymore because of these weapons that we have.
Right. Like I have in my gut the feeling that in some way the world is preparing and China itself is preparing for a war with China.
Yeah.
And why is nobody saying, hey, let's talk about reducing the number of arms in the world. That might be a way of, I mean, I have some sympathy for the Chinese. I mean, I'm not for the communists and all that, but they got to feed.
You're not for the communists, but let's just say.
They got to feed a billion and a half people.
Let's just say.
Give them some room.
We'll give you California, and then you'll leave us alone, okay? Is that okay?
I'd be willing. Most Californians would probably take that deal, too. But What I'm saying is there's not enough talk about you get peace when you work for peace.
Sure.
Like, that you should talk about that a little bit.
Yes, we live in a culture that is opposed to peace, and it's opposed to peace, and it's very easy, I think, for Catholics and especially Catholics who want to be good citizens to think about these terms politically rather than or legislatively rather than culturally. But we live in this society, in this world that is opposed to peace, and we should be thinking about the different ways that manifests itself. Murdering an unborn baby in the womb.
Amen, brother. Yeah.
It offends against, peace. Among other things,
so
peace.
Mother Teresa said that,
right?
The main
divorce. Yeah. Divorce offends against peace.
Right.
And I think if we're going to leave our listeners with one thing, because I know there's one more segment that you want to do after this, or maybe we'll go on. I don't know. You're the host.
Thank you, Chris.
but I think if we want to encourage our listeners, what is something that you can do in your life today, in your home? You know, maybe you flew off the handle at your kids. I have experience with that, right? And so there's some apology that ought to be made here, or to your spouse, or to someone that you have offended, or to ask for that person's mercy. These are works of peace, and we need to begin to every day affect these works in our own lives here in the building of Catholic Answers, in our homes, wherever we work. Be merciful to one another, be forgiving to one another, and that's going to cultivate an atmosphere and a culture of peace. And some of these things are outside of our control. I mean, it's good to speculate about them from a philosophical, theological perspective, but many of them are out of our control. But there are things that we can do to contribute to an atmosphere and a culture of peace that all of us Catholics are not doing enough of. And we hear peace all the time. We hear about it, but we just kind of just give it lip service and don't think, what am I doing in my own life to cultivate a culture of peace?
You have to give up resentments, ask for pardon, make amends, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Because is it consistent with the Catholic understanding of war and peace and all that to say that when war does come, it really is the consequence of an accumulation of sin that has been...
Sure.
Without a doubt. 100%.
Yes, it's exactly what it is.
War is always the result of sin. There's no...
And so the fact that
Even if it's Israel against the Palestinians, it's still about sin.
Yeah, but... And all these things that we have privatized are, you know, our gambling and our addictions and our... And I'm not trying to pick on anybody, but just, you know, our sexual licentiousness, all that. We act like, well, these are all private things. But they're not, in fact, private things. They're offenses.
There are no private sins.
Well, the actual point is that when we love our own individual good, which is what these sins are about, over the common good, we will become violent and abusive. It's like sexual sins, all these excesses in society. They're preferring your own desires over the good of your neighbor, and that's the root of violence right there.
So is it fair to say then, from what you just said, that we contribute to peace when we build up the common good?
Right, absolutely.
So tell me something about that. What do we Catholics mean by common good, and how do we build it up?
We mean that human society exists for an end which is not identical with human society, first of all. That is, we're not communists, we're not totalitarians, we don't identify ourselves with the society itself. But human society exists so that everyone in it can participate in a good which is separate from society, which is God or the supreme good or the ideal of human beatitude, whatever you want to call it. But it's something which everyone can participate according to his own measure, and society exists to foment and to encourage that. The life of virtue, the life of contemplation, the giving life to others and educating them, all these things. So the common good always is something which goes beyond just the herd
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's a totalitarian view. It would be like, you exist in order to promote the Soviet state or yes. the fatherland.
Right.
But no, you exist right. so that you and your family and those with whom you are living can find a happiness in something which transcends any one of your individual lives, and you can all share in it together. And it's not diminished by your sharing. And that's, of course, that's why society has to be founded upon sound religious principles, or it will become totalitarian and dictatorial.
Father Hugh, can I say that, is it fair to say that an ethic of nationalism offends against the common good?
Well,
in light of what you've just said there?
Say nationalism, let's say patriotism doesn't.
No,
patriotism. But patriotism says, it doesn't say my country is the best country in the world. It says my country is best for me because it's the country that gave me
my
life.
Mother.
Like
yeah.
my parents are not better than other parents, but they're my parents.
Yeah, my
so
parents
I'm devoted
are
to them.
Parents.
And not, well, I mean, but the point is that we're not, you know, we're not making
my
that
parents
claim.
Are probably listening, so that's why I'm saying my parents are better than other parents.
But mine are both in the world to come, so they understand.
Then they're even better than my parents, if that's where they are. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back to talk a little bit more about the common good and building it up with our guests on Catholic Answers Live.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
It might be said that anti-Catholic notions of the Church's history are the original fake news. With all the misinformation being spread, where does one look for the truth? In The Real Story of Catholic History, Professor Steve Weidenkopf gives you the facts on over 50 of the most common misconceptions about Catholic history and shows how to answer them simply and powerfully. Whether it's to answer claims about Catholicism's supposedly pagan origins, old myths about the Inquisition that never seem to go away, or more modern errors that anti-Catholics put forth, The Real Story of Catholic History is an essential resource for every Catholic's bookshelf. Order your copy of The Real Story of Catholic History today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Sharing the gospel with family and friends can be challenging. It's especially hard when they won't even hear you out because of all the mental roadblocks they've built up. This is Carlo Broussard, and in my new book, Prepare the Way, my aim is to help you tackle that essential first step to apologetics and evangelization, getting people to listen with an open mind. Even our best witness can bounce right off folks like these if we don't prepare the way first, breaking down barriers and leaving minds and souls free to encounter the truth. I'll give you evidence and arguments and step-by-step strategies based on asking the right questions to help them overcome their obstacles and make a straight path for the Lord. Order your copy of Prepare the Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What's up, EWTN family? Save the date, Saturday, November 3rd, Jacksonville, Florida. Join me for the EWTN Family Celebration. I'll be there with all your favorite EWTN personalities and amazing people from all around the country. I'll see you there.
Don't miss the EWTN Family Celebration coming to Jacksonville, Florida, Saturday, November 3rd. Join us at the Prime Osborne Convention Center for this free event. For details, go to EWTN.com/Family Celebration.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Great big Friday show. This Friday, we decided to have a little panel conversation. We invited in our president, Chris Check, and our chaplain, Father Hugh Barber, because I get to have these conversations with them where I feel I should have paid more attention in school, and I thought it would be good to share those.
That's everyone's sigh. Everyone should have paid more attention in school.
That's probably true. Yeah.
Except during gender studies or whatever.
That's when you can just look out the window and dream about girls.
Or whatever
it was. Jane, see.
Okay, wait. I'm afraid where this is going.
Yeah, well, you never know with Father. Behave yourself.
It was all okay. There were stereotypes. It was all fine.
All right. I'm on a little bit of a moral crusade, and I have some shame. I know moral crusades are not good for people in general, but I will put as a footnote there, see prohibition. But
That was a bad idea.
What, prohibition?
Yep.
Well, thank you. I think everyone recognized that.
In case there was any lack of clarity.
That's not exactly cutting edge.
Of the Catholic answer's position on prohibition.
Thank you for there that we go. Okay. Edgy political take.
Just wanted to get that out in the
prohibition
open.
You don't look like you agree, Father.
There are the pioneers, you know, so just don't forget that.
What does that mean, the pioneers?
The Irish movement, Pioneers of the Sacred Heart.
Oh, and they were
taking the pledge.
Were they teetotalers? No, but I think taking a pledge is fine.
Until you were confirmed or something?
Until you were 21, but then they tried to get a ticket for your whole life. Oh. And you wear a little pin.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That'd be so easy for me to give up alcohol for my whole life.
Unusual.
I couldn't
in the
give
Irish
up chocolate, but.
About.
It's called the misery induced by extreme alcoholism.
Though they have great, so they really write the best songs.
Yeah.
People always say, oh, this culture is alcoholics and all that. But like you, at a certain point, you get to every culture that has alcohol, like the Russians, they drink too much. Okay, the Poles, they drink too much. Italians,
The amount of liturgy and dogma a particular religion had indicated how much they drank. Russians are at the top.
Oh, because they were so liturgical.
His dad always said that that was a High Church Anglican, so he came right after them.
So he must have been, that's pretty High Church Anglican. That's I don't know about that. But okay, so
I'm just wondering how many ethnicities we're going to offend here.
I was saying that everywhere there's alcohol.
Would not object to that at all.
No,
and
I'm
the
sure
Anglo-Catholics
not.
Catholics would not.
No, and nor should a good Irishman
the
either.
The Irish know. The French know that it about themselves. I'm just saying that we always point out these cultures as if, they're such big drinkers. But everywhere there's alcohol, people drink too much of it.
Every other conceivable thing.
Yeah,
that
I guess excess.
So. What's the next question now?
Okay. Now that you've stated the obvious, Cy, can we move on? Okay, thank you, Father. Here's my moral crusade. I think too many Catholic people are paying for things that are very, very opposed to the flourishing of the Catholic faith. They're paying money out of their pockets to support things. And here's this is my peak one. And I know this is going to offend a lot of people. And not very many people have joined my moral crusade on this. But why are you paying to get HBO in your house? And you can make it go to the Showtime Network or whatever else. Why are you paying to take that in your house? When you know that's destructive of culture, and it's certainly not doing anything to facilitate the flowering of the gospel in the world, why are you paying for that? Am I just an outrageous prude, Father?
I don't know.
Wait, first of all, that took way too long. You need to. There needs to be an instant. No, you're not. Sigh. No,
I only found out today about the details of HBO because
I was telling you about them.
Yeah. I'm a virginal soul when it comes to television and stuff like that.
Yeah, right.
And so I really don't know what's involved in subscribing to HBO as opposed to Netflix or these other things that we have now.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure that there's some options which will be more or less offensive. But certainly if you're paying for something which requires you to pay for access to outright pornography, then – there's a problem.
Yeah, so I think first we could get Father.
That's as much as I can say.
I'm going to give you a fist bump on that one.
I think
Obama.
I actually think there's some more to say.
Okay, go ahead. More to say.
So yes. I think the first thing we might get Father to do is unpack. I've used unpack about four times.
Okay. I know.
Yeah.
I'm staying out of this business. I don't know.
Here actually your expertise is going to be helpful.
Okay.
So the first thing we want to look at is formal and material cooperation with evil and then proximate and remote under material. Right.
Okay, very good. Okay. We have a framework as Catholics in which to make these calculations morally.
Okay, okay.
I'm already panting.
Because you're so happy that he's actually getting to the church actually teaches.
But I mean, that's the first thing. Subscribing to HBO, which you have to do to get it, you have to. So first of all, maybe we have to agree that the programming on HBO or some portion of it is pornographic or it's immoral in some other way. Like this fellow Bill Maher.
Bill Maher.
A lapsed Catholic. He needs our prayers. Well, everybody needs our prayers. But even non-lapsed Catholics.
Who are they?
Have you ever met a non-lapsed Catholic?
I don't know.
This guy hears
Catholics
the confession.
All
knows
of them.
Everybody
yeah,
lapses.
But I mean, he is a fellow who in his program offends against truth, right? And the church. And then there's a lot of pornography. And people will say, this is a great program, Game of Thrones or whatever, or some of these others, none of which I think I've seen a complete episode. But inevitably, they all include, you know, the requisite scene of pornography. So so you're paying for this.
Yeah.
You're supporting it.
Right.
Right. That's how HBO makes these movies, because the subscribers pay for it. And so are you materially cooperating? I would venture to say that you are. All right.
I Father doesn't seem sure. And it's
I would almost want to see the list of things. I don't want to be burdening anybody beyond what's. But the point is that material cooperation means that there's a proportionate reason, again, why you might.
Yeah, I wouldn't say you're necessarily formally cooperating. You're right, not on the set there holding the
material cooperation is always allowed for a proportionate reason.
Right.
So that material cooperation is not a problem, because you can almost do – you can't do anything in human society without having some kind of material collusion with human defects and sins.
Right. Okay.
So that's just like – that goes without saying. That's why when people call for various kinds of boycotts, you have to be a little careful and say, that's what you want to do, fine, but I'm not formally cooperating. Mm-hmm. Formal cooperation means that you're actually contributing to or promoting the particular moral evil which is being presented or fomented or whatever. And that's a little different. For example, material cooperation would be you turn on the television set to any channel to see something, because there are almost none that don't have anything offensive.
Oh, okay, yeah, right. So there's
and
some
formal cooperation ass. Would be, well, in order to know what's on this network, I need to be exposed to everything that's on it, and so I'm going to take a look at this.
Oh yeah,
even though I know that it's wrong, and of course, and
but
or I have a guest in my house, and I have HBO, and since it's there in their guest room, I am providing that for them, whatever they do.
Oh yeah,
that's why. For example, I remember our Bishop McFarland of Orange. He used to complain the bishops' conference would meet in hotels, and some of the hotels had this kind
it's
of.
It's all hotels now.
He made an issue of that, and I don't understand how the Mormons who run the Marriott hotels, how they can go along.
Actually,
with that.
I think I should clarify, and somebody should look this up. I think Marriott has now
stopped
it.
Okay, good.
Thank God.
Thank God.
Yeah, at least the new hotels are building. But by the way, economically, I think that in-room pornography is going away just because it's ubiquitously available.
Right. It's available on the internet.
On the computer screen.
No one's making money on it,
yeah,
right?
So, yeah.
But at least not on the televisions.
But I do think Marriott made a point of saying, we're not going to continue, or we will not have it in new hotels.
That's good.
Well, whatever you
God,
might say about Steve Jobs,
to it.
You know, Steve Jobs, the Apple guy, he wouldn't allow that stuff to be sold through Apple devices,
yeah,
you know,
right.
through those marketplaces. And,
yeah.
Boy, that didn't harm them economically. I mean,
well, I think the argument would be just simply that if I mean, there is a good argument. If even secular people don't see the value in it, then why are religious people going along with
okay,
it?
Okay, so but Father, there is the possibility of culpability.
And again, I don't know anything about this, so I'm just telling you.
No, I know. We had to explain to Father how these channels work today, because he didn't know that some channels
yeah, you
on
subscribe,
cable.
You subscribe to it. It's
yeah.
in addition to your regular cable bill or whatever.
No, so you can get regular cable and not have HBO
like Netflix.
We
that's
did
something
for
where you just get what you want,
or
and not
or
bad
Netflix.
Yeah, Netflix
you pay
is like
for the
a, it's
thing.
Like a it's like a library,
right,
and there's
exactly,
some good things
right.
in the library,
yeah, well,
and there's
there
some bad things.
So,
but that doesn't say that libraries
so,
are bad.
I mean, why don't just go with that? I mean, we're not advertising for them, but I mean, the point is
because there are many, many good things certainly on all these yeah. stations.
Yeah.
So I mean.
But I want to press Father on this question.
He doesn't want to lay burdens on people, and I understand.
Is it possible that there's some culpability that the subscriber has some culpability?
If you're exposing your family or children to things that are immoral, if you have teenage children and you have HBO, then that's wrong.
But I mean, I was asking about cooperation.
Well, that's cooperation.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just basically you're buying it and then you're exposing your family to it. I mean, if it is as you describe it to me, then I would say, well, don't do that. Don't make it accessible to them.
Well, we have to take a break. I will tell you this, Father. My kids are adults now and still mad at me that they didn't get to watch any TV shows when they were kids. There was like two cartoons.
You're a good dad.
No, it's my wife. But they know every song from VeggieTales. But that's about it. We'll be we got to take a quick break.
Gilligan's Island. That's all I know.
Why are you mad about VeggieTales? We're going to talk at the break why you make a face when I say VeggieTales. We'll be right back on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Harry Connick Jr., and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Sharing the gospel with family and friends can be challenging. It's especially hard when they won't even hear you out because of all the mental roadblocks they've built up. This is Carlo Broussard, and in my new book, Prepare the Way, my aim is to help you tackle that essential first step to apologetics and evangelization, getting people to listen with an open mind. Even our best witness can bounce right off folks like these if we don't prepare the way first, breaking down barriers and leaving minds and souls free to encounter the truth. I'll give you evidence and arguments and step-by-step strategies based on asking the right questions to help them overcome their obstacles and make a straight path for the Lord. Order your copy of Prepare the Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Do you subscribe to Catholic Answers magazine? We hope, but if not, right now we've got a deal that you're going to love. We've reduced the price and thrown in a free digital subscription when you subscribe. That's right, subscriptions to Catholic Answers magazine just got cheaper, $10 less on one-year subscriptions and $20 less on two-year subscriptions. And right now, when you purchase a subscription, you get a subscription to the digital edition added to your order for free. With a deal like that, it's the perfect gift for friends, family members, seminarians, your priest, even yourself. When you get right down to it, what other gift has the potential to touch hearts and reap eternal rewards? Log on today to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com and sign up yourself, your friends, and your family for a magazine that is bound to make a difference in their lives and the lives of those they meet. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Call now with your question. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
We're doing Catholic Discussions Live for Catholic Answers Live today. We're engaging in a bunch of discussions with our chaplain, Father Hugh Barber, and our president, Chris Check. And
Dr. Chris Check.
Right. Honorary doctor, HPhD.
I'm a doctor too, but I don't go by the title.
Really?
I'm a doctor too. You have a doctorate in philosophy, right, Father? Mm.
Yeah. I have a doctorate in hard knocks.
That's good.
No, I don't even have that. So I was exposing my own prudishness a little while in our topic this half hour. I don't know if it's prudishness or not.
It is not. I think your instincts are good, Si. And there's a broader thing here.
Okay, so there's a broader thing. Let's get to it. That is the way – I'm not going to in any way try to pretend like I have come to some higher plane as far as the consumption of media because I
– Here we are.
Yep.
This is good media.
We're a media.
Yeah, of course.
We're the good guys, Father.
But we're still media, though.
Yeah. But I think I watch junk. You know what I watch? I watch those Marvel movies.
You don't need to.
Look at how debased.
No public confessions. No,
but okay. I don't want to act like,
I think the second Spider-Man was good, and after that,
the second Spider-Man was like one of the worst.
Meditations on chastity and whatnot in those movies.
Well, he's sort of a Christ figure in that, or something, right?
You know who's
the Sam Raimi one. Not the current Spider-Man, but the one before.
Yeah, Sam Raimi's
Spider-Man. Was that Tobey Maguire?
Right, we're showing how pathetic we are. I've never read Moby Dick. I just want you to know that
I have a
master's degree in literature, and I've never read Moby Dick. I've seen all of the.
Why are you abusing yourself like that?
It's Friday afternoon. Okay. I got to blow
up. Not the best work of American fiction, but the most important.
Is Moby Dick?
I would think so. It probably
is. Which Walker Percy novel is the best work of. Never mind.
Huckleberry Finn.
No, Walker Percy did not write Huckleberry Finn.
But that's the greatest American.
All right, so Father,
that's full of all kinds of unacceptable language. So,
it's about loyalty.
And I really appreciate what you do, Father. You, as a priest, do not ever. You don't want to be lecturing people about things that they actually have a moral ambiguity, and you need to just do the best you can, and you don't want to lay burdens on people. And right. I am prudish about some things, or I don't know if prudish is the right word.
Well, I
don't understand anybody.
I would like to have some burdens. Relieved of some burdens.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You would like.
I think that what we have to consider is that our Christian life, just general use of the media, that we have an obligation to make use of our memory and imagination in a way which will lead us to prefer the contemplation of heavenly things and the good of our neighbor to all the images that are constantly bombarding us. I mean, we basically have a media culture where, you know, don't even worry about HBO, just anything. We're continually bombarded, and we have no we have no continuous consideration of the things that really matter and that will lead us in the right direction in our lives.
Yeah, are they edifying?
That's why when Our Lady appears and says, pray the rosary, she's basically saying, use your imagination, your memory on your own without necessarily television or media, and consider the scenes of the life, death, and glory of my son, and you will heal your soul of its passions and get grace so that you can resist sin and persevere and do your duty and love your neighbor and reach eternal life. That's the point. So I think that's the real issue with our use of the media is how much entertainment do we really need? And if you look at Aristotle's, you know, Poetics, you go, he would certainly say that what we have nowadays is just completely
excessive.
Off. Yeah, totally off.
And it's, I really
it's
like
a generation
that phrase.
Of feelings for their own sake and not for any moral benefit.
Right.
Well, the data is terrifying, right? The number of hours that especially unformed brains spend in front of
Televisions and screens.
Visual right. images. Yeah, yeah. Screens.
But we as adults, okay, so now we're mature and we get to make choices for ourselves, and we can, to a degree that a child can't, we can overcome some of these passions. And it is the case that if you consume enough of popular media, you end up with an unquiet soul.
Right, exactly.
Yes, exactly. And enervated. Right. The enervating din of modern communication technology.
And right. Marshall McLuhan, who is the great founder of modern communications theory,
yeah.
Canadian guy.
And, still great, though.
And he came, right. Very,
yeah. I'm just teasing.
But he was Catholic.
I love Canadians.
And he came up with that famous line, the medium is the message.
Yeah, right.
Now, he attributed to Our Lady, he practiced a true devotion to Our Lady, according to St. Louis de Montfort. He attributed Our Lady the insight he had into the media. This is something people
really?
Don't know because his works are studied by anyone that has anything to do with media studies. And the medium is the message, meaning that whatever the content is, we have to look at the way at which it approaches our human nature. Like, what does it do? How does it appeal to our imagination, our memory, and our passions? And look at that a little more seriously.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as with food, all foods are good in a certain measure, but, you know, how does it deal with our, you know, physiognomy and our general health.
Yeah, how do these different media engage the imagination? Reading a book is not the same imaginative exercise as watching television.
Indeed,
I should say that the other way around.
Right.
And say for a seminarian, if any of you are listening, praying the Divine Office is very different from getting on a website and looking at nice, pretty pictures of fancy liturgies all around the world.
Right.
Yep.
Which is the pornographic culture that we have, where you have virtual reality.
Everything's image.
In place of yeah. real reality. So
I'm glad,
praying and stop looking at the pictures.
I'm glad Father brought up the Divine Office because since his arrival here, we as an apostolate have been praying Lauds and Vespers. And the effect of those two prayers on my own imagination, and I believe on the imagination of my colleagues, here is quieting. It's quieting.
But
let me pose a
little thought experiment for you. You tell me where you come down on this. The increase in atheism, agnosticism, irreligion in the world is very, very impressive. And there's a certain group of people who want to say, well, that's a consequence of the fact that we're learning science and we're learning all these things that disabuse us of these superstitions. But it seems to me that it's more likely, and I want to see what you think about this, that if we have no quiet in our souls, we lose the ability to hear God speaking to us, and that what we have done to
That's
ourselves and our children with this great media experiment is to create unquiet souls in ourselves, in our homes, in our families, and we actually can't hear the voices, the and I don't mean to say like the voices that are speaking in our heads, but I mean the divine voice
right.
that speaks to us. The day speaks of it today, and night to night
makes known the message.
Yeah, you know, right. Si, there was a document that came out by the Congregation of Education or whatever it was called on the formation and education of seminarians, in the world of modern communication technology. And this thing was written in the 80s. So when really what we're talking about is telephones, radios, motion pictures, and televisions, none of these other things that with which we have been overwhelmed. And yet this document points out that seminarians coming into training, and I don't mean to get after seminarians because it's all of us, it's every kind of student, you know, incapable of sitting down and having conversations. And so one of the things that this document prescribed was forcing seminarians to sit in groups and have conversations during which they used, you know, with attention to grammar and complete sentences. And this is in the 80s that this document was written.
Right.
And now it's like that on crack cocaine now.
Yeah, well, in our religious community, you know, we have recreation in the evening and there's no television. There's nothing. It's just the confreres there sitting around.
Talking to one another.
Right. That's horrifying.
They might be able to play a card game or something, but they just have to sit
there. But even a card game is the real world. It's tactile. It's conversational. It's all those things.
Your point about tactile there, I think, is something that is worth thinking about, especially when it comes to books and magazines. You know, we publish Catholic Answers magazine here, and it is in fact a magazine that you can subscribe to and have delivered to your
Free if you're a seminarian, right?
That's true. That's true. But you hold it in your hand, you smell it, right? Yeah. And you feel it. That is a different experience from reading something on a screen. It is.
But this kind of brings you back full circle to where we started today with the art and architecture conversation that we had. It seems to me that we should think about the mercy of making places that are quiet and peaceful, that have a kind of openness to them, you know, that they're not just like big rec rooms, you know, but that they evoke, because I do think once people can start to have the experience of a little bit of the peace that quiet brings and that beauty brings, and I don't mean just quiet in the sense of, you know, silence, but I mean quiet in the sense of the senses are not assaulted. They're soothed. They're addressed. They're nurtured in a that it's not so much, oh, you are old fashioned. Oh, you're a modernist in the church and all that. It's, can we think of the church as a service that we do? The church building itself as a service we can provide to the modern world.
Absolutely. And that's what it's for.
That capacity to be quiet is something now, especially that people have to make effort. That they have to work at.
Right.
Yeah. Because I have a hard time sitting and being quiet. You know, sit in front of a kneel or sit before the Blessed Sacrament, be quiet.
Yeah.
You know, for an hour or 15 minutes, right? Just being quiet. Because the culture in which we're living doesn't encourage.
Yeah, but Archer's machine back in the 50s, he said, well, the rosary is a perfect prayer because the attention span of the natural American adult is 19 minutes. Yeah. And a nice rosary is about 19 minutes. That was in the 50s.
When I
quote that in the parish now, all the adults just laugh because it's about 3 minutes max.
Yeah, you know? Right. So I think the rosary should be a decade now. Just get yourself to a decade.
Take that up with Our Lady of Fatima. I think she wants more from you.
Yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah, I think so.
She's one of the only ones I'll listen to.
Just take it
too.
One decade at a time.
It's 20 decades now.
Yeah. I thought a full rosary, isn't it the full 30 decades? That's a full, or am I confused?
Well, there are 15. And then, officially it's still
15 decades.
15,
I'm sorry. Yeah.
But not, JP2 right. added the Luminous Mysteries.
And you've never forgiven him for it. I know.
No. I pray them myself. What are you talking about?
I'm just kidding, because there's 150 Psalms. There were 150.
I found it something to take the place of that in Old Testament figuration. So the 200 towers of water and hewers of wood. So
you did. Okay,
you can find it. So I looked for 200 in the Old Testament. I found it.
All right. So one thing we are all agreed on after this is we need to be peacemakers in the world. We also need peace, and we're not going to get that if we keep going to the media well to be our consolation in the world.
So we need to tell our president, stop looking at TV, because when you have to push the button, you need to have a calm sense.
When you're tempted to push the button. You don't ever have to push the button.
Exactly. But let's just say we could all benefit from this, and it would cause peace.
It would also be a good example coming from him. The president has a certain role as a kind of teacher in the culture, too.
Let's pray for him.
Well, we should pray for everyone who holds that office. Everyone. And Father, will you give us your blessing before we go?
Benedictio Dei omnipotentis, Patris et Filius Spiritus Sancti, descendat super vos et maniat semper.
Amen. Thank you, Father. Thank you, Chris Check. I really enjoyed this. I hope that the listener enjoyed it as well. Did either of you enjoy it? Or
I had a great time, Si.
It's a riot.
Good. Yep. It's nice for me to have reinforced how little I know. Sitting next to Father Hugh will do that. Well, we're done for the work week. You can find us on the weekend at EWTN. But for our salutation, let us remember that Jesus Christ is the light of the nations. And we'll see you next time on Catholic Answers Live.